everybody. I'm Mary Bruce.
And I'm Rachel Scott. And this is Accountable, a special series from ABC Audio.
Rachel and I are correspondents for ABC News based here in Washington. We cover either end of Pennsylvania Avenue. I spend my days at the White House reporting on the Biden administration.
Mr. President, will you retaliate against Russia for this latest ransomware attack?
We're looking closely at that issue.
And I get my steps in chasing lawmakers around Capitol Hill.
Is there any reason why the Capitol should have been left vulnerable on January 6th?
No.
But right now, we've got this rare chance to, like, sort of catch our breath. There's no big election on the immediate horizon. Congress has left Washington for the summer recess. And after covering a president who really kept us on our toes with tweets that turned the news cycle on its head in an instant, Mary, I know you missed those midnight tweets.
I remember them all too well.
Well, let's just say things here in Washington have changed.
Somewhat. So here's why we wanted to do this series. We've got this incredible opportunity to talk about policy issues through the lens of Americans whose lives and livelihoods really depend on them. This is about sharing stories of real people facing real issues, people who are stuck, frustrated, even desperate, and really looking to Washington and their elected leaders for help.
And speaking of elected leaders, that is where we want to start, with the right to vote. For most Americans, it'll be several months before the polls are open again. But right now, debates are raging on the state and federal level about how we vote, whether it's too easy to cheat or too hard to cast a ballot. And as you may have heard, that question is really coming to a head in Texas.
I just want you to realize that I wake up every morning, I have been doing this for 4 years, with my freedom on the line.
Crystal Mason is 46 and lives just outside Dallas-Fort Worth.
I live in Rendon. My town is a rural town, predominant white.
She works at a car factory. But above all else, Crystal will tell you she's a mom, and not just to her own kids.
I raised a total of 7. My brother, he went away early, real early, and I raised his 4 kids with my kids.
Yeah, 7 kids, ranging in age from 19 to 26, packed household. They rode out the pandemic all at home together this past year. And to pass the time, Crystal says they turned to scripture.
We were learning the book of the Bible, so I made them learn the New Testament, the Old Testament.
It was her faith in God and in herself that kept Crystal centered back when she hit her lowest point. A decade ago, she was running this business with her ex-husband, and she was charged with tax fraud. She ended up serving nearly 3 years in prison.
While I was in prison, I had my mind framed that I was in school, because that's the only way I can do this time.
But she stayed focused and worked hard behind bars. She took classes. She was determined to land a job and get back to supporting her family as soon as she got out.
So my goal was, when I get out, I got a plan. I had a vision board. I wrote things out. I drew it. And I knew I was ready.
Her plan worked. She was released from prison in July of 2016. And she got a job almost immediately after at the Texas Department of Transportation. She was out of prison. And to stay that way, she had to follow the conditions of her release to a T. But really, she wasn't that concerned.
I haven't been around guns. I don't do drugs. I wasn't around felons. I did everything that was on black and white.
So she gets out in July of 2016, and things are going well for Crystal. And then November rolls around.
Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton pull out all the stops overnight.
So much of America waking up this morning feeling like they are glad that Election Day is finally here.
Then I turned around and it was time for me to vote.
She showed up on Election Day at the polling place that she had been to before. But this time, her name wasn't actually on the voter list.
And after that, I was just like, you know what, forget it. So I was getting ready to go and the guy said, you know, you can fill out a provisional ballot.
So, Rachel, let's remind folks what that is.
Okay, so a provisional ballot. That is something that is used when there are questions about a voter's eligibility. The vote only counts if everything checks out. So Crystal is offered this provisional ballot. She says, sure. She just fills it out.
I left. That was it.
But here's the thing. That wasn't it. 6 months went by.
Then I get a call from my supervised release officer. She said, hey, I need you to come in. A lady say, hi, are you Crystal Mason? I said, I am. And she said, go ahead and put your hands behind your back. I said, for what? I haven't did anything. She said, you're being arrested for illegally voting. I was like, what? No, no, no. Nobody told me that.
And just like that, Crystal was back on trial. So this case was centered mostly on what was actually written on that provisional ballot she filled out. And here's part of what it said. If a felon, I have completed all my punishment, including any term of incarceration, parole, supervision, period of probation, or have been pardoned. She told the court that she didn't read the fine print. And the poll worker, she says, just handed her the ballot and suggested she fill it out.
My supervised release officer, her supervisor testified on the stand and said, hey, no, we never told her.
While they did discuss at length the terms of her release, remember it came with conditions, the topic of voting actually never came up. Still, after all that, Crystal was convicted and she was sentenced to 5 more years in prison.
Okay, whoa, hold on. Wait a second here. 5 more years? Look, I get it. She says she didn't read that fine print, but she had served her time. So why exactly is filling out this ballot so wrong?
Yeah, so here's the thing. She was out on what is called a supervised release. And according to the prosecutors in her case, that means she was not allowed to vote.
Of course, I missed the holidays, Christmas, New Year's, my birthday, my daughter's birthday.
She spent 10 months back behind bars before she was released on bond while her case moves through the appeals process.
If you had black on in black and white that I signed saying that I could not vote, that right was stricken from me, do you think I would have voted? I'm not leaving my kids again. That was my whole mind frame. So there was no way that I would have did anything that jeopardized me from taking me away from my kids.
It's now been 4 years, and Crystal still does not know if she will have to go back to prison for filling out a provisional ballot in the 2016 election that was never even counted.
Hold up, hold up. She goes back to prison for filling out this provisional ballot, going through all of this, and that vote didn't even count?
Yeah, the system actually worked here. It was checked and it wasn't counted. And of course, a lot has now happened since her conviction.
We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
Fast forward to the 2020 election and all those accusations from former President Donald Trump and his supporters that the outcome of the election was somehow rigged, which of course we know was not true. But now Texas, Crystal's home state, is poised to put even more restrictions on voting.
Yeah, and that brings us back to that drama that you'll remember unfolded in the Texas legislature.
Senate Bill 7 is called voter suppression by Democrats, but election integrity by Republicans.
If people don't know, don't have confidence that the elections are working, that the votes are going to count, people are not going to participate.
So Republicans hold the majority there in the state, and we're poised to pass a bill with sweeping new restrictions on voting. No more drive-through voting, no more 24-hour voting, new limits on absentee voting, increased access for partisan poll watchers, and even harsher penalties for election officials who break the rules, intentionally or by mistake. In fact, this bill seeks to make it a second-degree felony for an election official to give a voter a mail-in ballot application if they haven't specifically requested one. So to be clear, right, that means that offering someone an application would be a crime in the same class as manslaughter.
This legislation was designed to suppress the votes of Texans, in particular Texans of color.
So Democrats in Texas are strongly against this bill, but since they're in the minority, there's really not much they can do to stop this from becoming law. And that's why they took that dramatic step of walking out of the House chamber just a few weeks ago, one by one.
The legislative session ended. The much-debated Texas voting bill was blocked.
There are 86 ayes, 0 nays. The motion to excuse fails for lack of quorum.
There needs to be at least 2/3 of the 150 members present to hold a vote on legislation, so they effectively shut it down by leaving.
And we're not going to stand for this continued attack on our democracy until we have a seat at the table and we can discuss an actual bipartisan piece of legislation.
But that tactic, it can only work for so long.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott said in a Twitter post after the walkout that he intends to call a special legislative session, saying the bill, quote, still must pass.
So really, Democrats' only option here is to try and make changes to the bill. They've introduced several amendments, including a pretty broad one with a provision that would make a big difference in Crystal's case. It would change the law so it's only illegal to cast a vote when you're ineligible if you do so knowingly, if there's intent. So the ball is now in the Republicans' court on this. We've reached out to several state lawmakers who support making voting laws in Texas even more restrictive, but they all declined our request. But the head of their party, Texas GOP Chairman Alan West, did agree to speak with me. And I started by asking him, just big picture, what would this legislation do and why does he think it's really necessary?
Well, I think it is very necessary to protect the Texas election laws, our integrity of our system, and make sure that there's fair and honest. I believe that we do need to have photo ID for voting. I mean, who would not want to have that? I have to present a photo ID tomorrow when I catch an airplane to go down to the Rio Grande Valley. We don't want to see these universal mail-in ballots go out that are unsolicited. We had an issue down in Harris County, which is the largest county in Texas. 2.7 million unsolicited ballots they want to send out. And we need to make sure you have signature verifications on that. So we want to protect our systems.
I'm trying to get a sense of what problems you're trying to address, because Texas already has the strictest voting laws in the country. And there were actually very few complaints about fraud in the last election.
Well, I think the problem is this: when you have a county clerk down in Harris County who tried to send out those mail-in ballots unsolicited. We know that we had issues in Travis County and also in Dallas County where I live with poll watchers not being allowed to fulfill their duties. And we want to make sure that that is not the case. But again, I think when you look at the attempt to nationalize elections under the federal government, we've got to make sure that we protect ourselves as sovereign states who have the responsibility and the enumerated duty to conduct elections down at our levels. That's what I think SB 7 is so important to do.
But do you have any doubt overall about the legitimacy of the last elections in Texas?
Well, we did not see any unconstitutional actions that we had happen. We don't want to see governors, secretaries of state, or judges changing election law. The only people who are supposed to change election law is the legislative branch. But yet you saw that happen in several other states. We don't want to see what happened in Pennsylvania, where they sent out 1.8 million mail-in ballots and they got 2.5 million back. So I think these are preventative measures. And especially, again, when you look at what is proposed in H.R. 1, we want to make sure that that does not happen down here in Texas.
You mentioned Pennsylvania, but actually 3 million people requested absentee ballots there, not 1.8 million. So actually 500,000 were
okay,
but
were you
not
also
returned.
But you also had judges and you also had other non-legislative entities changing election law in Pennsylvania, as well as also in, I believe, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona.
Look, you're well aware of the criticism of this bill, right? That it amounts to voter suppression. And there are lots of people.
The only people that have ever been part of voter suppression in the United States of America is the Democrat Party. If you want to talk about Jim Crow, that was a Democrat policy. If you want to talk about literacy tests and poll taxes, Democrat policies. This does not suppress anyone from voting. And like I said, I will have to present a photo picture ID to get on an airplane to go down to the Rio Grande Valley. So what is wrong with showing a picture ID to participate in the electoral process in the state of Texas or anywhere across the United States of America?
But there are lots of people who submitted their votes last November in ways that are now going to be disallowed by this bill. Most of them people of color. Are you concerned that this law will make it harder for people to vote or will dissuade people from
voting? No, it's not making it harder for people to vote. It is making it easier for people to vote, but harder for people to cheat. And I had several people.
But what evidence is there of cheating through these measures?
I had several people that were black here in Dallas County who came up to me as the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas and said, you know, I went to show up to vote and someone told me that someone had already voted in my name. So we have those type of things that we want to make sure that it's taken care of. And again, I don't see where we're preventing anyone from being able to vote. No one has come down and complained about not being able to vote.
I hear you saying, you know, you want to take these measures to prevent people from cheating. I'm trying to get at where is the evidence that any of these measures were somehow leading to cheating?
Well, you only had
23 complaints of fraud from the 2020 election itself in Texas.
If you think that everything is hunky-dory and fine with election systems all across the United States of America, you're just telling yourself a lie.
I guess I'm trying to dial down a little bit into some of these particular voting mechanisms, right? So in Texas, you're looking at banning.
I just explained it to you.
I know, but let's dig just a little bit further. Look, you're trying to ban drive-through voting and a 24-hour uninterrupted
curbside. Why do you need 24-hour voting? I mean, are we going to have polling locations at Denny's and Waffle House? You know the type of fraud that opens you up to?
Well, but that's my question. What is it about these particular mechanisms that you think makes them particularly susceptible to fraud versus other ways of voting?
Because I just tend to believe that in the middle of the night and 2 o'clock in the morning, I mean, there are nefarious and bad things can happen. I'm 60 years of age. I have never seen us worry about 24-hour voting in my entire life. And so why is it all of a sudden we need to have 24-hour voting? Now, if you really want to rectify it, then make Election Day in the United States of America a national holiday, and so that people don't have to go to work. And that provides them plenty of time and access. We have plenty of time doing early voting. If you want to have a legitimate absentee ballot like we did when I was in the military, that's fine. But we have all the measures in place. And so all of this about 24-hour voting, this is not about, you know, restricting or voter suppression. This is about opening up potential for issues in our voting process.
Potential for issues?
Yeah.
Not that you've actually seen that these restrictions.
We don't have 24-hour voting, so no. But you're talking about the potential for things to happen. But I guess you're fine with us not having fair and honest and integrity in our election cycle.
Sir, it's not about me or my opinion. I'm trying to understand.
It is. I mean, you're asking questions. And so what I don't like is when people ask questions of me and I answer responsibly. But I'm asking you, do you believe that we should not have picture ID for our voting?
Sir, again, it's not about me and my opinion. I'm trying to understand what's in the law.
It is about you and your opinion. I want to understand, what do you believe in? What do you think is right?
I'm just trying to make sure that our listeners understand what's in this legislation and why you feel it's so important.
It's important,
I know you're making
because
the case.
We want to protect the integrity of elections in the United States of America, and especially right here in Texas.
So help us understand where we go from here, right? We saw the walkout that happened just a few weeks ago.
That was very immature.
We know that Republicans have said, you know, there's some who want to make some tweaks to this bill or make some changes. What does the path forward look like?
Well, I'm not down there in the Texas state legislature, but the path forward should be that we pass SB 7.
And do you think that's going to happen?
Oh, it will happen, yes.
In this special session that's coming up?
Unfortunately, it has to be in a special session. It should have been done during a regular session. It was the number one priority for the Republican Party of Texas. It was the governor's priority. It should have been completed and done by mid-March.
And what's your message to voters, you know, who may see some of the criticism of this and be concerned about the impacts of this law?
My message to voters is that, don't you want to make sure that you have secure, honest, and fair elections, especially in a state that has a border with a foreign country? We want to make sure that everyone's vote is counted and it is a legal vote from a legal citizen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
God bless you.
So that interview got a little heated.
Yeah, clearly he feels passionately about this and thinks there's a high likelihood there has been voter fraud, even if that's not been proven, right? There's no evidence that somehow voting at 2 a.m. outside a Waffle House leads to fraud, or that undocumented immigrants are rushing to vote illegally. But I think my big takeaway here is that West admits he wants this law passed to prevent the potential for fraud that could occur. But Rachel, there's a bigger political play happening here.
We must stop the steal, and then we must ensure that such outrageous election fraud never happens again, can never be allowed to happen again.
Remember, former President Trump is still pushing this lie that he lost because the election was riddled with fraud. And these Republican states are now following his lead by enacting these stricter laws.
Right. So let's zoom out just a little bit here.
You see this assault from restrictive laws, threats of intimidation, voter purges, and more.
Across the country right now, we've seen 15 Republican-led states recently pass more than 20 bills that restrict voting access. Democrats are pushing back on the state and federal level. And in fact, next week, we expect Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer to bring H.R. 1 to the floor for a vote.
S1 would nullify many of these voter suppression laws and protect the rights of American voters, whether they cast their ballots for Democrats or Republicans.
Now, this is the bill Chairman West talked about. Its formal name is For the People Act, and it would create a national standard for voting access. Things like automatic voter registration and at least 2 weeks of early voting would be mandated everywhere. Now, this bill has already passed the House, but it's not clear if Democrats have the votes to get it across the finish line in the Senate.
Now, is it possible we might change a few things here and there? We're going to do it. We've had discussions with Senator Manchin, and they're continuing.
So as you noted, Barry, if H.R. 1 does not make it to President Biden's desk, Democrats are worried voting restrictions on the state level, like the ones in Texas, could mean that some people just don't feel comfortable voting at all.
Get educated in your state and know your do's and don'ts in regards to voting and your rights to voting.
But even after everything that she's been through, Crystal Mason sees these voting laws as the exact reason why people should vote.
I don't want nobody to be in the situation I was in. It's not fair. It's not fair at all. Do not let my story discourage you from the polls, but encourage you to go to the polls. Because you know why? The prosecutor that did this to me, he was an elected official. The judge, an elected official. The DA, an elected official. You get what I'm saying?
So there you have it, our first episode of Accountable. We'll be back next Saturday with a look at police reform. More than a year after George Floyd's murder in Minneapolis, two city councilors are pushing for change, but they don't see eye to eye on how to make it happen.
This council is going to dismantle this police department.
I strongly believe that reform and transformation of our public safety models take money.
That's next week on Accountable. A big thanks to our producers, Shannon Crawford, Cheyenne Hazlett, Sarah Kolanowski, Lauren Lantry, Kelly Torres, Adia Robinson, Susie Liu, and Madeline Wood. Our executive producer is Liz Alessi. A big shout out to Jordan Phelps, Elisa Wersima, Quinn Scanlon, Eric Mallow, Brad Milkey, David Rind, and Stacia Deshishku. I'm Mary Bruce.
And I'm Rachel Scott. See you next time.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.